This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Annie Laurie Gaylor, hello heathens, and a special shout out to women and free-thinking feminists, because tomorrow we celebrate Women's Equality Day. Tomorrow is the 92nd anniversary of women's right to vote.
I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is the August 25th, 2012 weekend broadcast of Free Thought Radio. The show is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. We podcast. We also broadcast in other cities, including Grand Rapids in Monterey, California. And we told you last week about the new broadcast in Columbia, Missouri on KOPN, which airs on Wednesdays at 1. And are there some other new stations, Annie Laurie?
I'm pleased to report that debuting just this week, three stations out of Ithaca, New York will be carrying Free Thought Radio. Thanks to the hard work of a Cornell professor who used to listen to Free Thought Radio in Ithaca when we were part of Air America and worked to get us back on the air. Free Thought Radio will be leading off what he calls Skeptical Sunday. There'll be skeptical shows following our broadcast every Sunday morning at 8. So you can listen in Ithaca, New York on W201CD 88.1 FM. And on Sundays at 8, also in Odessa, New York, 89.9 FM. And Watkins Glen, New York, 91.9 FM. We're glad to be back in Ithaca and a warm welcome to our new listeners there.
Well, maybe Sunday isn't just the day of rest. Sunday is the day of radio for the rest of us. Free Thought Radio, this show is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And our group has two purposes. The first one is to keep state and church separate, which we do through legal action and complaints. And the second purpose is to educate the views of non-believers, atheists, agnostics, non-theists, whatever we call ourselves.
And we'll talk a bit more about women's equality later on the show. And on the second half of today's show, we'll bring on a guest from Florida, Charles Nigi, who is an associate professor at the University of Central Florida in Orlando in the field of psychology.
And he had a recent experience in one of his classes this summer, an experience which made it into the Huffington Post. We won't tell you the whole story right now, but he was teaching about religious bigotry in his class on comparative cultures, and this class discussion ended up being an object lesson in religious bigotry, and so we look forward to talking with him about that story today.
And as usual, we have a whole lot of news to report, quite a variety, and let's lead off with something that's been dominating the news, and that would be this remark by Missouri U.S. Representative Todd Akin.
What about in the case of rape? Should it be legal or not?
Well, you know, people always want to try and make that as one of those things. So how do you slice this particularly tough sort of ethical question? It seems to me, first of all, from what I understand from doctors, that's really rare. If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down.
Can you believe that? These remarks by Representative Akin are actually considered mainstream by religious right anti-abortionists. As the New York Times reported on August 20th, the insulting fallacy that during rape, as Akin put it, the female body has ways to shut that whole thing down to prevent a pregnancy stems from a notorious anti-abortion ideologue, Dr. John C. Wilkie. He is a Roman Catholic who published this lie in a book in 1985, and then he repeated it in a 1999 article. And he told the New York Times this week, offensively, he said, "This is a traumatic thing. She's, shall we say, she's uptight." He said he was talking about a woman being raped, and he added, "She's frightened, tight, and so on. And sperm, if deposited in her vagina, are less likely to be able to fertilize. The tubes are spastic."
Yeah, it's very prurient. We have all of these anti-abortion men talking about women's vaginas and things like this. And the whole thing is kind of, more than disturbing.
But is that true?
Of course, it is not true. Dr. Michael Green, professor of obstetrics at Harvard Medical School, told the New York Times, "There are no words for this. It's just nuts." Wilkie maintains, quote, way under 1%, unquote, of rape victims become pregnant. But a 1996 study in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, which is generally considered one of the few peer-reviewed research efforts on this subject, estimated that 5% of rapes result in pregnancy. And of course, if you're dealing with incest and repeated crime, you're going to have a higher percentage. But this is the idea of the if someone's ovulating, what's their chances of ovulating at the time of this assault? Then they're going to get pregnant.
Representative Aiken is a religiously motivated anti-abortionist who sponsored legislation in 2008 called the National Year of the Bible. And it was to promote greater recognition of the Ten Commandments. You know, in the Ten Commandments, women are considered property. Aiken's a member of the Presbyterian Church in America. He claims that liberals are trying to remove God from the public sphere. All six of his children are homeschooled, and according to a New York Times piece this week called "A Politician Whose Faith is Central to His Persistence," Representative Aiken participates in Bible studies and prayer groups, and his friends brag that he is far to the right of Rush Limbaugh.
Representative Aiken has provided divine reasoning as to why he would not quit after the uproar over his remarks. Basically, he thinks God called him to run. And one of his pieces of legislation was aimed at restricting the definition of rape. It did not pass. But by the way, Wisconsin's U.S. Representative Paul Ryan, a Roman Catholic, co-sponsored Aiken's legislation to narrow the definition of rape. And by the way, the GOP platform, as always, is against legal abortion with no exceptions for rape and incest.
Speaking of the Republican National Convention, the Freedom From Religion Foundation will be urging Republicans next week and Democrats in 2 weeks to stay out of the religion business with billboards in Tampa, Florida and Charlotte, North Carolina. FFRF is placing billboards in both cities, hosting the national political conventions with our special election year caveat to keep religion out of government. This one really cute, very attractive, patriotically colored billboard has artwork by the editorial cartoonist Steve Benson, whom we've talked with on this show. It depicts a finger-wagging Uncle Sam warning that God fixation won't fix this nation. Benson, by the way, is the great-grandson of Ezra Taft Benson, who was Secretary of U.S. Department of Agriculture under Eisenhower and later was president of the Mormon Church. As many of you know, Steve Benson left the Mormon Church in a highly publicized break in the early 90s. Our 10-by-30-foot God fixation billboard went up this week in Tampa on Kennedy Boulevard, 50 feet west of Arowana Street, in time to greet GOP convention goers. And in time for the DNC, we're placing two billboards in Charlotte, including a hard-to-miss 14-by-48-foot version near downtown Charlotte at 1720 Freedom Drive, which is 900 feet west of Moorhead. Traveling from the airport, those traveling to the Democratic National Convention will be treated to a highly visible view of our God fixation won't fix this nation message on a 10-by-30-foot billboard on Interstate 77 north of 5th Street.
So two chances to see it in Charlotte. And I want to thank very warmly Attorney George Daly, who's done pro bono work for FFRF and lives in Charlotte, for doing legwork. He actually drove by all of these billboard choices and gave us some very good recommendation. So thanks, George.
So we're not being a political group here. This is an equal opportunity message to both political parties and all public officials. Essentially, we secularists, who comprise nearly a fifth of the U.S. population, are telling government officials that it's time to get off your knees and get to work.
And I always like to say God fixation won't fix our nation or any nation. A preoccupation, the United States preoccupation with religion in government and in our lives, and our political fear of offending religious lobbies is holding back our nation scientifically, intellectually, and morally. And also, by the way, Cardinal Timothy M. Dolan, who is Archbishop of New York and president of the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops, has been invited to deliver the closing prayer at the Republican National Convention. Dan, why didn't they invite you?
Yeah, why don't one of the two parties invite me to give a closing...
An opening invocation.
Yeah, an opening atheist invocation to represent us non-believers.
And the need to keep religion out of government. Yeah. Anyway, he'll be there. And of course, FFRF has been highly critical of Dolan's role in trying to sabotage the contraceptive insurance coverage mandate. And we have exposed that role of the bishops in our signature newspaper ad, "It's Time to Quit the Catholic Church." We'll talk about that in a minute. It's already run in the New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, and the Los Angeles Times. And so anyway, it's this unseemly partnership between religion and politics that disrespects the constitutional principle of secular government. And we believe so firmly dogma should never trump humanity or civil law.
We did the same thing 4 years ago in Denver at the DNC and Minneapolis at the RNC. So this is continuing a tradition of ours.
And in other news, and speaking of Timothy Dolan, the head of the Catholic Conference, FFRF's signature full-page ad that we had prepaid for in Salina, Ohio, has been censored by the Daily Standard. The Daily Standard has a double standard. Hmm. It was supposed to run today, and we had prepaid for it, and thanks to a kind donor who underwrote it. And then they said it won't run. But in June, they accepted a full-page ad from an anti-abortion outfit that's religiously based, urging Ohio Senate President pro tempore Keith Faber, who's from Salina, to pass a fetal personhood bill. And we get a lot of complaints about state church entanglements in Ohio and how are we ever going to make any headway or educate with such obvious and blatant favoritism and censorship. And my question to Salina and to that publisher is, whatever happened to the vaunted marketplace of ideas? And so, and I do want to put one more caveat that FFRF's billboards always have our name on them, Freedom from Religion Foundation. The only billboards that we have up in Charlotte, for example, say God fixation won't fix this nation. So don't mix up any of our billboard campaigns with some others you might be hearing about.
Coming up in today's show, complaints about sporting event prayers in public schools are already starting this school year. Things are really heating up in Chattanooga.
And we'll play a tribute in honor of Women's Equality Day. And then we'll speak with Professor Charles Nagy about religious bigotry coming close to home. I'm Annie Laura Gaylor with Dan Barker, and we'll be right back.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. First, a heads up. We're looking for, look for a fascinating interview of Clergy Project graduate Jerry DeWitt, who's a former Pentecostal preacher from Louisiana. In tomorrow's New York Times Magazine, the article by Robert F. Worth, From Bible Belt Pastor to Atheist Leader, is actually already available online.
And Jerry DeWitt, we know him. We've interviewed him on this show. He's one of the members of the Clergy Project, which helps members of the clergy escape the ministry. Jerry will be speaking at the Freedom From Religion Foundation's convention in Portland, October 12th to 14th, as part of a Clergy Project panel. So if you want to go, it's time to sign up. Make sure you get a hotel room. Richard Dawkins will be there, and it's going to be a great convention. To register, go to ffrf.org/convention for all the details. Now, here's a WRCP Chattanooga report on FFRF's complaint about football prayer at the University of Tennessee.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation is taking aim at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Now, this is the same group that sent letters to Soddy Daisy High, Ray County High Schools, and most recently the Hamilton County Commission to stop the public-led prayers. Channel 3 Eyewitness News reporter Gordon Boyd is live in the studio with how UTC is responding to this.
It has not yet, David. UTC's chancellor has known about this for 2.5 months, but the Mock's first home football game is 4 weeks from yesterday. But the FCA, the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, doesn't know whether it or any other group will open with a prayer in Jesus or any other deity's name.
The pregame home game tradition may be as old as Mock's football itself, well before the University of Chattanooga became part of the public UT system.
a prayer for safety for the players, a prayer for safety for all the crowd, just for God to be honored in the way that both teams competed.
Delivered over Findlay Stadium's PA, closing with "In Jesus' Name."
Pray on your own time. Christian-only prayers are impermissible at public universities, and they make non-Christians and non-religious people feel like outsiders.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation sent out its first letter in May, telling Chancellor Dr. Roger Brown those lead prayers violate the First Amendment's ban on government establishment of religion. Another letter went out last month.
It wasn't a legal issue or anything like that. They weren't threatening lawsuit or anything.
This might end up being a court case because the precedent is too clear.
A couple of compromises would seem to pass legal muster. A moment of silence or a prayer circle, student-led or otherwise unofficially led, unmiked and unannounced. That's how Ray County High School's FCA chapter has done it since the Freedom From Religion Foundation complained 2 years ago.
In some ways it makes it worse because it's pitting students against students. Nobody ever misses prayer, by the way, when you stop it.
If we're asked by UTC to continue offering the prayers the same way we have, we certainly will.
But if the FCA has to leave Jesus out,
they just wouldn't ask us. They know where we stand.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation says that all of this came out of a UTC student's complaint, but says the student wants to keep his or her name secret. Live in studio, Gordon Boyd, Channel 3, Eyewitness News.
So, to change the subject tomorrow to something nicer, Sunday, August 26th, is the 92nd anniversary of the date on which the 19th Amendment was finally passed after more than a century of struggle in a movement that was initiated and sparked by women without superstition. And the 19th Amendment passed August 26th, 1920. And so this song we want to play is for my mom, Ann Gaylor, principal founder of FFRF, who at 85 is still running the Feminist Women's Medical Fund abortion rights charity, paying for abortions for needy women in Wisconsin, denied medical assistance for this medical right due to religious interference. The song is the traditional ballad, Bread and Roses, performed by my talented co-host, Dan Barker.
As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people here are singing, bread and roses, bread and roses. As we go marching, marching, we battle too for men, for they are in the struggle, and together we shall win. Our day shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses. As we go marching, marching, unnumbered women dead go crying through our singing their ancient call for bread. Small art and love and beauty, their trudging spirits knew. Yes, it is bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too. As we go marching, marching, we're standing proud and tall. The rising of the women means the rising of us all. No more the drudge or idler, ten that toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories. Bread and roses, bread and roses, bread and roses.
That was Bread and Roses, performed by Dan Barker. And I'm Annie Laura Gaylor. Who's coming up, Dan?
We'll be talking with Charles Nagy, a professor of psychology at Central Florida University, about an incident in his classroom when he was talking about religious bigotry, when actually an incident happened, which was an object lesson of religious bigotry.
And also, happy birthday to, there's a lot of feminists born on this occasion, including people like, Barbara Ehrenreich. If you go to freethoughtoftheday at fffrf.org/day, you can find all the famous freethinkers born every day. And there are many feminists born, yes, tomorrow.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are co-presidents of the nonprofit, NONPROPHET nonprofit.
I get it.
FFRF, an educational charity working to keep religion out of government and to promote non-theism. And we have one of our FFF members from Florida today as a guest.
Charles Nagy. We saw a story that ran in the Huffington Post this last week about a professor at a Florida university teaching a class about multiculturalism and actually having an object lesson in his class about religious bigotry. And it was posted to, I think, to Reddit, and then it was caught on from there. An interesting article. And as we're reading it, we realize, hey, I know that name. Turns out he's a member of the Freedom from Religion Foundation. Charles Nagy, N-E-G-Y, is associate professor of psychology at the University of Central Florida in Orlando. He started there in 1998, and he's been talking about cross-cultural studies, multicultural. He's written a number of articles and contributed to books. One of his articles was called Religious Bigotry, the Neglected Ism in Multicultural Psychology and Therapy, and a long list of accomplishments. But we want to welcome you to Free Thought Radio, Charles.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So it's quite a story, but before we get to your actual story about what happened in the class, which was pretty riveting, tell us about yourself. You know, were you raised religious, or were you always a non-believer, or what are your views?
I was born in 1960 in Houston, Texas, and growing up in a Southern Baptist home. So, absolutely, I was raised in a religious environment. And I was quite a believer myself. And really quickly here, at age 25, I went to study at University of Madrid in Spain. And it was because I had to, as part of a course I took in history of Spain, I had to learn a little bit about Islam. And it was my first time to actually take a look at a different religion. And I started saying to myself how it's so obvious that this individual named Muhammad is not a real prophet. I'm not sure why close to a billion people think so. And it occurred to me to ask myself, why am I so confident that Jesus is a real prophet? And the answer I came to was not one I wanted to come to, which was there is no evidence for that. I had only believed that for so long because I've been raised that way. And so that was the turning point in my life when I began letting go of my religious beliefs and started seeing the world more scientifically in terms of based on evidence. And of course today, I identify myself as an agnostic. But if someone were to say to me that, oh, so that means you're open to embracing, say, one of the religions, then all of a sudden I let them in. No, in that regard, just consider me an atheist.
Huh. Well, there you go. Well, they're kind of the same thing for a lot of people. That one is a lack of belief and one's a lack of knowledge. So it comes basically to the same thing. So why didn't you just say when you were a believer that you just knew Jesus was the true prophet because you felt it in your heart? Isn't that what they say in the Southern Baptist Church?
They do, in other circles, I'm sure. I think at that point, I was a junior in college, and I was starting to increase my sensitivity to the importance of evidence when forming opinions. And so it was at a point in my life where I wasn't going to embrace a belief anymore just because it made me feel good. There had to be some, what I consider to be pretty strong, credible evidence for me to embrace some belief. So that's probably why I did not just simply dismiss my my situation and continue forward with the religion that I was raised in.
Then you went on from there to get your PhD from that bastion of liberalism, Texas A&M, where's that?
Central Texas. Texas.
Yeah, College Station, Texas.
Yes. Again, I'm from Texas, but I went out to California shortly after high school, and I got my bachelor's degree from California State University, Fullerton. And then, as you indicated, I went to Texas A&M, back to Texas, to get my master's and PhD in clinical psychology. So I'm also a licensed clinical psychologist here in Florida. It was rough for me living in College Station because I had lived 10 years in Southern California. And by then, of course, I was pretty secular by the time I got to College Station. But in all fairness, at Texas A&M, the institution is wonderful educationally. It's the city and surrounding culture that's challenging for those of us who are more progressive in our thoughts.
I did a debate there, so I know what you're talking about. And I saw them building the bonfire in one of those years. And you spent a lot of time on the Mexican border then, getting firsthand knowledge of multiculturalism.
Well, I'm actually bi-ethnic myself. My father was Mexican-American, my mom is white, and I grew up in Texas, which, of course, has a lot of Hispanics. Of course, in living in Southern California, I encountered a lot of different people. But you're correct, my first faculty job was at University of Texas Pan-American, which is 9 miles from the border of Mexico. And a lot of my research has focused on Hispanics in particular. And I have done quite a bit of traveling in mostly Latin America and Western Europe. I have lived in 3 countries, the United States, Spain, and El Salvador, due to a Fulbright scholarship that I had last year.
Wow.
So those combined experiences allow me to appreciate how complex life is and how arbitrary much of our beliefs and customs are. But it also allows me to respect people and their right to behave and believe as they wish, as long as they don't cause problems for others.
So you've really made a study of multiculturalism, the psychology of clashes of culture and so on. And tell us why you became a topic in Reddit and Huffington Post. Why? What happened? Was it something that happened this summer in a classroom?
Okay, this will take about 5 minutes of our time, but I'll try to make it quickly. Last spring, in the spring semester, I was teaching my cross-cultural psychology class. This is an upper division psychology course. And I let the students know, and by the way, I've been teaching this course for 15 years here at University of Central Florida. I let the students know that my approach to studying different cultures is one in which I'm not interested in romanticizing any cultural group. That based on my fairly extensive travels and my age and so on, I've encountered people from all over the world, and I'm convinced that there's good things about different cultural groups, and there's also some challenges or not so good things about these groups. And in my class, we're going to address both the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so it's not a class on political correctness. And I also let them know up front that I'm not that friendly towards religion. In fact, today my view is that religion is sort of a toxic element in society. It's oppressive, etc. And so I let them know what they're getting into. So back to that class. Every class, there are some students who get somewhat upset over the things I'm covering in class, because I point out pretty straightforward way that there's not really any evidence for something like the soul. I don't know what it is, and I say to my class, there's no one here who can tell me what it is or provide me any evidence for it. Ditto with heaven and hell and angels and demons and so on and so forth. So I'm used to some students in the class getting pretty upset over that and wanting to sort of have a debate. But despite the fact it's a large class, there's anywhere from 300 to 450 students in the class each semester. I manage the class well and get people stay focused and not get too upset. And we have I monitor how intense the debate is. If it seems to be getting out of hand, I'll do whatever's necessary to bring it, notch it down some. But in that particular case, last January, when we started the spring semester, some students, in my opinion, got pretty vocal in insisting in front of 456 students, that's how many that were in that class, that their particular religion, which in this case was Christianity, is absolutely the only real religion. And so I decided to just say to the audience, well, if you think that's the case, look around you and you see how diverse this class is. It's so large. There are some Muslims in here and there's some Hindus. I invite anyone who wants to stand up and tell the Muslims who are in this class that how do you know for certain that Jesus was the real prophet and not Muhammad? And, of course, no one responds to that because, of course, it would be a hard task to do. And then I said, I went ahead and added, and if you'd like to, or if you'd like to, stand up and tell the class, how do you know the Christian God is a real God and not the Hindu gods? We're all ears. We'd like to hear this. No one took up the offer, but one student raised his hand, and I got kind of excited, kind of looking forward to hearing what would he dare try to say to try to support his point. To my surprise, he said something along the lines of, and he stood up to do this, not just raised his hand and wanted to speak, but he stood up, announced to the entire class, which remember, this is a large class, that I ask you in the name of God, do not give in to this. Do not respond to Negi. Don't participate in this. And it really irritated me because the student more or less was taking over my class and telling the rest of the students that they should not participate in what I consider to be the essence of what a university is, which is to engage in discussion and dialogue and debate over issues.
And what right does he have to tell those students that they can't think and analyze?
Absolutely. And so even though I was pretty angry at him, I took a deep breath. I told him, then fine, I won't be talking to you then. I'll talk to the rest of the class. So I invited the class to continue in the challenge that I had laid down, but it was too late. The tension was too high, and there was anger in the air from not only me, but students too, I'm sure. So I took another deep breath and said, well, fine, we're going to move on now, but I promise you we'll come back to this issue later on when it's more appropriate. So I continued on with the course, went home that night, and decided I need to send a message to the students so that they at least understand what the purpose is of a university. And of course, I took that opportunity to expound upon my position, which I'll be happy to talk with you about if you're interested, in terms of what constitutes a religious bigot.
Yes, we do want to talk about that, but we need to take a break. Okay. And also, we won't have time for you to, you know, read the entire letter, but we want to get to the letter that you eventually distributed to your class about this. And
then how people can read the letter online, too.
And yeah. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylord.
I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned. We're talking with Charles Negi, professor, associate professor of psychology at Central Florida University. Stay tuned.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylord.
And we're continuing our talk with Charles Negi, who is an associate professor of psychology at the University of Central Florida. And he was just telling us about an incident that happened in his class in which he then sent a letter. And Charles, let me just read one sentence from the letter that you sent to the class, because it's a fascinating letter. And by the way, the letter can be found. There was an article in Huffington Post this week that reproduced it.
And then, shouldn't we say it's also on posted on Reddit.
And in that letter, you said to the students, for the Christians in my class who argued the validity of Christianity last week, I suppose I should thank you for demonstrating to the rest of the class what religious arrogance and bigotry looks like. So that was religious bigotry then, in your opinion.
Why don't replay what the student refused to participate in your class structure. Just quickly say again what happened and then...
Yes, I had challenged students who were wanting to state openly that their religion, which is Christianity, was really the only religion and all the others are falsehoods. I had challenged them to explain to the rest of the class, including some of the Muslims who were in the class, how do you know with certainty that Jesus was the real prophet and not Muhammad? And I also extended that challenge to say, if you want to also explain, how do you know the Christian God is the only real God and not the Hindu gods? Could we also have Hindus in the class as well? And that's when the student stood up and tried to shut the class down. Really quickly, if I can address this issue of religious bigotry, you know, it's one thing to say, I'm not speaking for anyone or any other religion, I'm just speaking for myself, that the religion I believe in makes the most sense to me, and so it's the most valid to me. That's a reasonable position for a believer to have, in my opinion. It's the other position which the students, some of the students, a handful, were manifesting in the class, where they openly declared that, no, their religion is the only real religion and all the others are falsehoods. And so it's that latter position that, in my view, reflects religious bigotry. It's akin to someone who, it's one thing to be pleased with your ethnic or racial group membership. It's another to actually think that your race or ethnicity is superior to the others. The former makes sense and is reasonable. The latter is, in this example, reflecting racial bigotry in that example. So there, for me, is what the definition is of a religious bigot. It's not just being pleased and happy with your religion and knowing that it makes the most sense for you. It's declaring that, no, in absolute terms, it is the only valid religion and all the others are falsehoods.
Well, then to go beyond that and to tell everyone else in the class, stop listening to any other point of view. You know, that's a proactive kind of bigotry.
It, you know, not only that, it reflects an attempt to actually subvert the class and take over the class.
Now, you said, you did write this letter, and we didn't get the chronology. Did you distribute this right after this incident?
The very same night, I sent the letter in a mass email just to my students. And, of course, I was aware that the email may very well come back to harm me in some way because someone who may not like my views or whatever may want to go to the administration here at the university and try to cause problems for me. So I made sure, I read it several times to make sure that I thought it's a letter that I could live with.
It's eloquent. It's quite an eloquent statement.
It's talking about the whole purpose of higher education.
Yeah,
I covered a variety of themes in there, one of being what is the purpose of university, in addition to what constitutes religious bigotry. And also I'm letting it know that I have little tolerance for behavior of students who will try to take over the class. But in short here, someone from the class took the email and I guess submitted it to Reddit, which I was not actually familiar with at the time. And if I'm not mistaken, they received over 700,000 comments. And I was interviewed by some local news stations, and I got messages from around the country, most of them supportive. And then, of course, it went away. And by the way, the class proceeded as usual, and no unusual number dropped out of the class.
What about the kid that tried to disrupt the class? Did he settle down?
He stayed in the class, and he actually participated in an appropriate way from that point onward.
Well, he got some higher education then.
I would think so too, hopefully. And then so this was all last January in a spring semester, and then, of course, last weekend, for reasons that I'm unsure of, the letter resurfaced on the Huffington Post, and then here we are again.
The mysterious ways of the Internet.
That's right.
Now, you also said, or somebody said, that there was a student in the class, maybe it was the same class, who question whether you should even be talking about religion at all in a cross-cultural psychology course.
That's correct. Before we got to the end of the heated moment, a young lady raised her hand and said, in a challenging way, I should say, that I thought this class was about culture, not about religion. Now, personally, I think her real point was to sort of stop me from discussing religion, but I can't know for sure if that was her motive, but nonetheless, I went on to explain somewhat in the letter that actually culture and religion often go hand in hand, and many times it's hard to separate. You know, just really quickly here, I'm a non-believer, I'm not religious, but yet I still sometimes cut down a tree and put it in my house at December for a Christmas decoration.
Well, so that's, of course, a pagan custom.
Well,
Taken over by the Christianity.
Okay, yeah. But let's just say today it certainly is tied to celebrating Christmas and the birth of Jesus.
Yeah.
And I'm acutely aware of that, and yet despite the fact that that's the case, it's part of the culture too. And people who are even non-believers, this is my point here, a non-believer like myself can actually do something like that that has currently a religious meaning, but it's part of the culture too. So it's hard to disentangle what's cultural and what's religious.
Well, because there are religious cultures, you know, food habits and dress habits and music styles and days of worship and pilgrimages and all those things that go along with most religions.
Mm-hmm.
And you also told the students, you know, that you're not, I like this line where you told them, some students erroneously believe a university is just an extension of high school, where students are spoon-fed soft topics and dilemmas to confront, regurgitate the right answers on exams, and then move on to the next course. And you said, no, this is not the purpose of a university. What is the purpose of a university?
The purpose of a university is to be free to explore questions with no limits on what questions can be explored, and no limits to your freedom of expression as long as you're not violating the rights of other people.
And to develop critical thinking skills.
Absolutely.
Well, that's part of what I had to learn when I went from a religious college and then I started learning beyond. You know, if I limited myself to religious books, I'd probably still be a believer today. It was higher education that really made a difference in the minds of many.
Thank you so much. We've been talking with Charles Nagy,
Associate Professor of Psychology.
Appreciate it.
Thank
your
you
work
for giving me the opportunity to express myself.
Maybe we'll meet someday. We also want to thank Dave McCann. Dave McCann's in here working hard as our engineer and our producer. And this show is produced here in Madison, Wisconsin. Find out more at ffrf.org/radio.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org. Join us at ffrf.org. It's very easy to do so. You can ask for a sample copy of our newspaper. It comes out 10 times a year, 24 pages, chock full of more information. Meet a member, our legal victories and fights. And you can also phone 1-800-335-4021. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.